our state, our health department will protect the public and the children from this radiation and tell the truth to the public, because right now the public is not being informed about the truth.
All right, well, Daphna, thank you so much for calling and tell us about all this. Real quick, before we wrap up, is there a website people can go to?
There's actually a lot of websites. So our website is weareTheEvidence.org. And by the way, last night, the wireless industry, who's really not doesn't like what I do, penetrated the website, removed every data that was on the website, and we had to spend a lot of hours this morning rebuilding the website. So, so weareTheEvidence.org, this is my organization, and this is our website. There's a wonderful website, Safer EMR. EMR stands for electromagnetic radiation. So Safer EMR, that is from Dr. Joel Moskowitz from Berkeley University. We have another good website is microwavenews.com. Another website with a lot of information is Environmental Health Tracker website. So there's a lot of websites. You know, they said that we are the most well-informed society that has ever died from ignorance. So there's a lot of information about the truth about wireless technology health effects.
Now, Daphna, I'm going to have to cut you off there because we're at the end of the program. But again, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very, very much, and good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Good evening. The time is 6 o'clock. Look at that. And 49 seconds. You are listening to the one, the only KBOO Portland. And up next is Transpositive PDX.
Don't worry. I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
Dearly beloved,
oh yeah, come ride and dance with Diablo all over Portland as we celebrate Prince's birthday on Thursday, June 7th at 8 p.m. with a mobile bicycle dance party. We'll be rocking Pedalpalooza and dropping the Prince jams all night long with frequent dance stops. Once again, that's Prince's birthday bike ride celebration, Thursday, June 7th at 8 p.m. More information on the KBOO website under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Northwest Deaf Arts Festival on Saturday, June 16th at Mississippi Studios in Portland. The Northwest Deaf Arts Festival consists of a family-friendly matinee show as well as an adult-only 21 and over evening show. Performers include hip-hop artist Sean Forbes, dancer Antoine Hunter, poet Raymond Luzak, and more. Again, that's the Northwest Deaf Arts Festival on Saturday, June 16th at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Mississippi Studios is located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO. Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. We're here tonight with Key of Q.
Hi, we are Key of Q. We are a gender-affirming singing organization that centers trans and non-binary voices. We can go around and introduce ourselves. My name is Shell. I use he or they pronouns.
My name is Charlie. I use he, him pronouns.
My name is Mirror, and I use zezer or they, them pronouns.
My name is Tess, and I use they, them pronouns.
Hi, my name is Finn, and I use he, him.
My name is Jordan, and I use he and him pronouns.
My name is Sebastian, and I use z and zer pronouns.
We are so excited that you're joining us tonight. Key of Q and Transpose are part of a overreaching organization, Transpose PDX. Key of Q, that's us, is an outreach group, and then Transpose is a large community choir. And we want to share with you some upcoming performances that we have so you can come and see us again. We will be doing a Pride Declaration on Thursday, June 7th at 10 a.m. We will also be at the Trans Unity Performance at the Waterfront on Saturday the 16th in the evening. We're going to be singing at the Pride Arts Pavilion on Sunday the 17th. Transpose is going to be singing at 3:40, and Key of Q will be on stage at 4:20. We have a concert known as Brave at Bridgeport Community United on June 24th at 4 p.m., where you'll be able to see both groups perform. We're also available to be booked for your upcoming wedding or other event. Please message us on Facebook on our page Key of Q.
You want to announce a song?
Oh, we're going to sing a song for you now. The song is called Shut Up and Dance.
Do, 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 do. Don't you dare look back, just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back, they said shut up and dance with me. This sweetheart is my destiny. They said, do, shut up and dance with me. We were victims of the night, the chemical, physical kryptonite, helpless to the base and the fading night. Oh, we were bound to get together, bound to get together. They took my arm, I don't know how it happened. They took the floor and they said, oh, don't you dare look back, just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back, they said shut up and dance with me. This sweetheart is my destiny. They said, ooh, shut up and dance with me. My discotheque Juliet teenage dream. I felt it in my chest as they looked at me. Oh, we were bound to be together, bound to be together. They took my arm, I don't know how it happened. We took the floor and they said, oh, don't you dare look back, just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back, they said shut up and dance with me. This sweetheart is my destiny. They said, ooh, shut up and dance with me. Deep in their eyes, I think I see the future. I realize this is my last chance. They took my arm, I don't know how it happened. We took the floor and they said, do, 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 do. Oh, don't you dare look back, just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back, they said shut up and dance with me. This sweetheart is my destiny. They said, ooh, ooh, shut up and dance. Don't you dare look back, just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back, they said shut up and dance with me. This sweetheart is my destiny. They said, ooh, ooh, shut up and dance with me. Do, 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 do. Ooh, shut up and dance with me. Do, 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 do. Ooh, shut up and dance with me. Do, 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 do. Shut up and dance with me.
I'm going to remind you again about all of our upcoming performances. We're going to be really busy. We'll be at the Pride Declaration on Thursday, June 7th at 10 a.m. We will be at the TransUnity performance on Saturday the 16th in the evening at the Waterfront. We're going to be at the Arts Pavilion at Pride on Sunday the 17th, Transpose at 3:40, Key of Q at 4:20. And we're doing an entire concert to ourselves called Brave at Bridgeport Community United on June 24th at 4 p.m.
Great, thank you. Do you have any more songs?
Oh. Well, we sure can, probably, yeah, right?
Yeah. Maybe one more?
Which one would we have ready?
Harbor Me?
Harbor Me.
Harbor Me. We can do Harbor Me.
Yeah.
No?
Okay.
Yeah, we have enough people. We can do it.
Sure. There won't be a fourth part, but...
Okay.
So this is Would You Harbor Me? It was originally performed by Sweet Honey and the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Would you harbor me? Would I harbor you? Would you harbor me? Would I harbor you? Would you harbor a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, a heretic, convict, or spy? Would you harbor a runaway woman or child, a poet, a prophet, a king? Would you harbor an exile or a refugee, or person living with AIDS? Would you harbor a tomb in a garret of truth, a fugitive, or a slave? Would you harbor a Haitian, Korean, or Czech, LGBTQIA? Would you harbor a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, a heretic, convict, or spy? Would you harbor a runaway woman or child, a poet, a prophet, a king? Would you harbor an exile or a refugee, or person living with AIDS? Would you harbor a Tubman, a Garrett, a Truth, a fugitive, or a slave? Would you harbor a Haitian, Korean, or Czech, LGBTQIA?
Key of Q. Any last words?
Come to our shows.
Come see us.
And book us.
Let us sing at your queer weddings, please.
Please let us sing at your queer weddings.
Thank you so much, Key of Q and Transpose. We will be back in just a minute with Susan Stryker and with Deb Porta from Northwest Pride. Okay, and we are back. Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. My name is Emma and I use she or her pronouns.
Hi, I'm Guinevere. I use she or her pronouns.
I'm Jean and I use she and her pronouns.
I'm Deborah. I use she and her pronouns.
I'm Aiden. I use he and him.
I'm Nicolette. I use A and M.
And we also joined on phone by Susan Stryker. Are you there, Susan?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Would you like to introduce yourself and your pronouns?
I'm Susan Stryker. I'm a historian and an academic. I edit a journal called TFQ, Transgender Studies Quarterly. Filmmaker, made a film called Screaming Queens, The Riot at Compton's Cafeteria.
Yay!
And,
which you won an Emmy for, by the way.
that is correct. So anyway, yeah, I'm very happy to be here.
Great. Thank you so much. So we're going to be sharing space tonight with you, Susan, and also with Deb. If it's okay with you, Susan, we're going to give Deb a little bit of time at the right off because she's going to tell us locally what's going on with Northwest Pride. And then for the rest of the show, we're just going to be having a conversation with you.
cool. I'll just be hanging out listening.
Great. Thank you. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Can you tell us what's going on with Northwest Pride this year? When is the parade? Anything special we need to know about this year?
The Portland Pride Parade. Yeah, excuse me. Portland Pride Parade. It's going to be on Sunday, June 17th. Kicks off at 11 a.m. from the North Park Blocks. The Waterfront Festival is Saturday the 16th and 17th. Saturday opens noon to 8. Sunday is 11:30 to 6.
And that's down there along Waterfront Park,
right? It's between Pine Street and the Morrison Bridge.
Is it still free to get in?
Oh, it's a suggested donation of $8.
$8, great. Yeah.
And but no one's going to be turned away.
No one turned away, but suggested donation. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Isn't the Trans March that Saturday, too?
Yes, it is. Trans March is steps off from the North Park Blocks. Rally is at 2, and step off is at 3:30, and it winds its way along the parade route to the waterfront.
Great. Yeah, and I think are there accessibility vehicles again this year?
Yes, always.
For Trans mm-hmm. Pride. And mm-hmm. what about for the, let's talk about the big Pride March on Sunday. What time does that start out?
It steps off at 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. What time does it really start?
It steps off at 11 o'clock. That's the one thing we can count on is okay. Even if we wanted to wait, the city wouldn't let us.
Mm-hmm.
People start gathering at 8.
Yeah.
And then if your contingent has a vehicle, get it there early.
Mm-hmm.
Folks should be in place and ready to go by about 10:30.
Uh-huh.
And bring some water, bring a chair if you've got a vehicle, because it's big.
What's the weather going to be like this year?
According to the, we won't jinx it, we'll knock on some plastic here. It is supposed to be, Sunday is supposed to be mid-80s.
Ooh,
sunny.
Nice.
Saturday is upper 70s.
Oh,
sunny.
Wow,
yeah,
great.
It's a perfect weekend.
Great for Trans March and Dyke March and Pride March. Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's so great. So is there anything new going on down at the waterfront this year for the festival?
There are two new components to the festival. We don't change the inside very often because it's just a lot of logistics involved. But this year we're really excited to be partnering in two areas. The LGBTQ Arts Pavilion, we're partnering with the Gay Men's Chorus. And some other organizations. There are 9 LGBTQ arts organizations who are partnering in a large space, pavilion space. They're going to have performances, exhibits, information. It's going to be a pretty active space. And on the other side of the park, the Prides Collective, which is a collection of Pride organizations and LGBTQ organizations of color and trans organizations as well, primarily grassroots. And this is the first time that these organizations have really come together to work together to produce something. And so we've been working on this pretty close to a year. And they're going to they're going to have performances. They're going to have lots of information, lots of space. They're going to have some food. So that should be really interesting as well. And that's going to be on the north side of the park. So those are the two big.
Great. That is so exciting. It sounds like it's going to be a really good Pride again this year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot that goes into organizing this, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
For Northwest Pride.
Portland Pride is one of the largest prides west of the Mississippi these days. It's a year-round planning mm-hmm. effort. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
And if people want to find out more about Pride Northwest, where can they go?
Our website is pridenw.org. The parade lineup is posted. That's always the big one everyone's waiting for. Entertainment mm-hmm. information
We're
is
number
on there.
105.
Right. I told you it's big. There are somewhere between 175, 180 groups mm-hmm. marching.
Oh, and who's the Grand Marshal this year?
Grand Marshal is something we've never done before. We've asked our LGBTQ youth, our young people, to be Grand Marshal. Typically it's a person or a group. And this
so
time,
it's all
like,
a category of
right,
identity.
It's a category,
cool.
And because we really wanted to bring them to the forefront and to prioritize our young people, which has always been really important to us. Several organizations that serve that exclusive group of people, LGBTQ young people, will be marching with them to ensure that folks are safe, that they're cared for, that they're supported.
Mm-hmm.
GLSEN.
Smirk,
the living room, and outside in.
Outside in.
We'll all be marching in that space as well.
That's so great. Oh, yeah. It's all about the youth. It is. We're going to do a show sometime this year just about LGBTQ youth. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to share? I know you're busy, Deborah, so...
We're just hoping that folks will come out to the festival, come out to whatever's happening during the week. We know that this is a really interesting time we're living in.
Yeah.
And community together is the only way that we will be able to move forward. And so that's who we are, and that's what we hope to have happen.
Great. Thank you so much. We've been joined by Deborah Porta with Pride Northwest. Does anybody else have any questions for Deborah?
You mentioned the park several times, and just to clarify, which park?
That's Waterfront Park. That's the Waterfront Park Festival.
Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Okay, thanks. Well, we're going to just take a really quick break, and then we'll be right back with Susan Stryker for the rest of the show. Thank you so much, Deborah, and we'll see you at Pride.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But he just kept right on strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words.
And we are back. We're back tonight. We're so excited to have Susan Stryker on the phone.
Absolutely.
Susan is an amazing, like a cultural gem of our community, of our trans, gender non-binary, gender queer, gender fluid community.
Susan, you're an icon.
Yeah. So Susan, thank you so much for joining us. Jean told me to rewatch Screaming Queens last night just as a refresher for your work, and I did, and it was so great to see that. So, Susan,
glad you did that.
Yeah, Susan, thank you. Can you tell us, just for starters, just for folks who maybe aren't familiar with you, just tell us a little bit again about you, like who are you and what do you do?
I feel like I'm kind of at the point in my life where I get to call myself like a granny tranny, you know. I am 57 years old. I transitioned in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, I've been out as trans for, you know, 25, 26, 27 years at this point. It's just been amazing to watch the growth and transformation of the community. You know, I wanted to use my training. I'm a historian by training. I kind of came out and transitioned when I was in grad school at Berkeley, getting a PhD in U.S. history. And, you know, I could not really at that time in life, you know, get hired anywhere. It's like, you know, being trans was a huge stigma, you know, even sort of more than it is now. It was trans before trans was cool. And
even in the Bay Area.
Even in the Bay Area. And so I just thought, well, you know, it's like I know how to do research. I know how to write. I know how to think. I know how to talk. I'm just going to, like, get busy and, like, try to, you know, do my part to, you know, kind of help recover the history of trans people and put out, you know, news that we can use about ways that trans people have made community and resisted oppression and fought back and, you know, been creative and inventive. And, you know, over the course of 25 years, it's like it actually, like, turned into a job. You know, I was ultimately able to get hired as a professor. I'm a professor at the University of Arizona. Oh. Where I'm able to lead a transgender studies initiative. Like, we've been able to hire trans faculty. We recruit trans students. You know, it's like it's really exciting what's happening there.
Where in Arizona?
University of Arizona.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and you know, I edit a journal, TSQ, Transgender Studies Quarterly, which helps publish work by, for, and about trans folk. And as you were mentioning, I've moved into filmmaking. You know, I back before I was a professor and, you know, needed to sort of focus on, like, you know, how do you get tenure and publish and all of that, I thought, well, you know, I'm on the outside of the academy. I can just sort of do what I want. I don't care if it ultimately leads to tenure or not. I'm just going to do the work that I think is most interesting to me and most important. And I had found a story about trans people in San Francisco's Tenderloin back in 1966, 3 years before Stonewall, who fought back against the police when the police raided this all-night cafeteria that they would hang out in. And I thought, well, you know, why write an article about this if I could, like, make a movie and, like, reach more people? So I learned how to be a filmmaker, and I was really fortunate that we were able to get funding through ITVS, which is a group that works with independent media producers to make content for public television. And we made a film that had a national broadcast, and as somebody mentioned earlier, again, I was kind of blown away that we actually won an Emmy for best historical and cultural program. So
that's a great victory.
Anyway,
yeah,
it was fun. So, like, I feel like I've had a good run. I am just enjoying you know, being able to do work that I find meaningful, and as well as, like, you know, work that I think is, you know, hopefully useful and serves the community. So really appreciate having you all having me on the show.
Yeah, that's so great. So yeah, I was watching Screaming Queens last night, and it's amazing how much things have changed in this country in like 40 years. Has it been? No, it's been 50 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, 50 years in 2016. So yeah, 52 years. Yeah. So yeah, you know, it's, you know, at the time there was really no alternative to you know, for trans people to be considered either criminals or people with you know, a pathological medical condition. And, you know, however marginalized people feel now, you know, it was worse. It was an order of magnitude worse back then. And, you know, whatever positive things we have in life, I just always want to acknowledge that we are standing on the shoulder of our ancestors who came before us and helped make space for us today.
That is, this is Aiden, by the way. That is very, very important, because I think that our youth especially, it's important to pass on that information, because a lot of the people that are haters, you know, what they call an agenda is a fight that we started back in, like, what, 1968, 1969, and I think it's important that they know, too.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, it's what I love most about being a historian. You know, like, people think that history is sort of, like, boring, because, like, I think that's how it gets taught to us a lot in school. But it's like, you know, who was president when, and what war did we fight, and, you know, some level, like, who cares, you know. But what I think is really radical about history, and that is so useful for trans people, you know, because, like, we still live with oppression today. And what history teaches us is that sort of, like, it's like the past was really different than the present, you know, and the present came about through actions that people took to transform society. And just as the past was different from the present, so too can the future be different from today. It's like history is like a testimony that says change is inevitable, and whatever things are like today, through our actions, we can make a future. You know, hopefully it's the future that we want to live in, and not one we're just, like, trying to survive in. But, you know, it's like history teaches us that, you know, we have some agency, and that change is going to come.
I think that's amazing, and I really appreciate that, because I find that as a trans activist and LGBT activist and feminist and all these things, I get so many people asking me, well, why do you channel all this effort into activism if it's not going to make much difference right now? You're still dealing with all this oppression right now. And I say that maybe the way it is right now, but every little change that we make in the present is going to have a huge ripple effect in the future. Every bit of effort we all put into this together right now is going to make a big change for future generations. And that's why we need to keep fighting.
Yeah, Susan, this is Jean. And, you know, the theme for our show this month is of course, Pride and Pride celebration. And so we thought we might take this opportunity to kind of pick your brain and ask you to kind of give us a basic history of Pride and its evolution through history to the type of Pride events that this generation is participating in and witnessing today.
Oh, you don't know how dangerous that is. It's like I said, I'm a professor and a historian. It's like one drop a quarter in my slot and say, tell us the story of how this happened, and I can go on for hours.
Gene researched this question. We vetted this question for you.
So, I'll say, like June is Pride Month because of Stonewall. You know, that Stonewall was the riot, the revolution, the resistance that happened the last weekend in June in 1969 in New York, where a bar was raided in Greenwich Village, and people fought back against the police at this bar. There's a lot of controversy about, well, were there trans people there? Was it gay people? You know, who actually was rioting at Stonewall? And the thing that I like to remind people is that, the fighting wasn't going on in the bar. The fighting was going on in the streets. Mm-hmm. And the people who were resisting at Stonewall were the people who lived in the neighborhood. It was street youth. It was, people of color. It was suburbanites, bridge and tunnel people coming into the city to, party on the weekends. It was this whole mass of people, and it's really pointless to, get into these debates about who threw the first brick at Stonewall and, was it a gay riot or a trans riot? It's like it was a riot by marginalized people who were resisting structural violence and oppression, and that's the thing to keep in mind, not, petty identity politics, Trans people were there, other people were there, gay people were there. It's like the thing to remember is resistance. But it's curious why Stonewall was remembered and not some other thing. Like part of what I've learned as a historian, and this is a brief little plug for one of my books, I wrote this book called Transgender History, The Roots of Today's Revolution, published by Seal Press.
We have a copy here.
Cheap, easily, accessible, it's aimed at a mass audience. It's not, a weighty, historical tome. It's designed to be a kind of a quick read. But one of the things, that I talk about in that book is, there was like a riot at this place called Cooper Donut in Los Angeles in 1959, where, people on the street, they're, hanging out around a late night coffee and donut shop in a neighborhood that's got a lot of, gay and trans people and sex workers and street youth. And it's like police come in to bust people and people fought back. There was a story of a similar kind of thing in Philadelphia in 1964 at a place called Dewey's, which was like a, late night, kind of cafeteria diner style place, open 24 hours. And Dewey's started refusing to serve people in what they called non-conventional attire, which we sort of interpret as being like people who were, quote unquote, cross-dressed or dressed in a gender that they weren't assigned to at birth. And, people resisted. It's like they did a lunch counter sit-in. A lot of the people who went to Dewey's had been active in the African-American civil rights movement, and they were using that tactic of like the sit-in at the lunch counter
I saw that
discrimination.
In your film, Susan, I saw that you linked the connection between the civil rights movement and the emerging gay rights movement of the 60s.
Yeah, that's true. We did do that. And, it's like we were trying to tell the story of what happened at Compton's cafeteria in San Francisco in 1966, which is the main topic of that film. And you know, part of what mobilized people in San Francisco was this minister who was at Glide Memorial Methodist Church, this guy, Cecil Williams, who had come to San Francisco from Texas, where he had been the coordinator for the NAACP, coordinating the lunch counter sit-ins and protests statewide. You know, so like he brings this, you know, civil rights sensibility to San Francisco. And, you know, it inspired people in the Tenderloin neighborhood where that church was located. I mean, there were definite crossovers between civil rights activism and gay and trans activism. So, you know, it's like I said, it's a little, it's kind of curious, you know, given this other, you know, the sort of longer history that we can see of resistance to the social oppression that trans people face. Why Stonewall? Why is it that Stonewall is what's remembered? And, you know, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. It's like, one, it was bigger, you know, but it's like it was also something that was preceded by smaller events that kind of built up to Stonewall. But the other really important thing, I think, is that from the beginning, Stonewall became something that was almost designed to be memorialized. And so what I mean by that is that for a number of years before Stonewall, there'd been a group of people in Philadelphia who had been holding protests at Independence Hall on the 4th of July weekend. You know, and these were very, you know, sort of quote unquote, you know, respectability oriented gay and lesbian people who would, you know, wear their suits and their dresses and, you know, carry signs that said, you know, discrimination is wrong and, you know, I served my country in the war and I should be, you know, shouldn't have my citizenship infringed upon. You know, so it's this very kind of respectable, you know, dignified protest that had been going on, I think, since like 1964. And when Stonewall happened, remember it happens the last weekend in June, and the next weekend was this protest in Philadelphia, which is not so far from New York. And some of the people who had been involved in the Stonewall, you know, uprising went to Philadelphia and they were, you know, basically saying, it's like, y'all, you know, like, it's like this revolution's happening. It's like, this isn't just about peaceful, dignified protest. It's like, you know, it's like, come on, like, to the barricades, comrades. And the people in Philadelphia were like, no, that's too much, that's too far, you know, like, you know, we're gonna, you know, catch more flies with sugar than vinegar kind of mentality. And these younger people who'd been really energized by Stonewall, they basically said, well, we don't really want to participate in this polite protest anymore. Next year, we're going to commemorate Stonewall. So, I mean, literally within a week of Stonewall happening, people had decided that it was going to be something that would be commemorated as the beginning of sort of the queer revolt. And they spent a year organizing. It's like there was outreach nationally on college campuses, and there was like the Gay Liberation Front that got founded, and you know, it's like it was designed from the beginning to be something that would be remembered and memorialized. And you know, I think that's why, you know, Pride became the month of June, and it commemorates Stonewall rather than commemorating some of these other things that are actually earlier and are in fact quite similar to what happened at Stonewall.
Susan, in your film and also in the conversation around Stonewall, I wonder, at the time it seemed like there wasn't so much of a distinction between gay, trans, queer, non-binary. Like, it was all just kind of like one thing. It was different. It was like people who are queer, basically. But now it seems like we have so many different kinds of identities. Like, now we have trans pride. We're having trans pride. This is our fourth year of doing it here. And I'm just wondering, there were a couple of things I was wondering about. One was back in the day when Stonewall was happening, when Compton's was happening, I watched the film, and it seemed like most of the, you either had AMABs, assigned male at birth, or you had people who were just like openly gay, but I didn't see as much like AFAB or like transmasculine, that kind of thing. So where is that in our storytelling, or the telling of the history of Pride? And where is this conversation now regarding like queer versus like the different kinds of identities of queer?
Oh my God, ontology.
Well, that was like three questions, each of which could be like, had like really long answers.
Yeah, that's all right. That's sorry.
Yeah, right. No. So the first one about like, you know, like how come, well, so the first question about like back in the day, was it more just like, you know, what we now call queer, you know, just sort of like everybody together. And I think there was some of that, although, you know, like there's always been a tension, I think, it looks like back into the 19th century between people who are sort of like gender nonconforming, you know, regardless of, you know, who their partners are sexually, versus like people who are more gender normative and tend to have same sex partners. It's like that's a division that, you know, we can see back into the like the 1860s. So I think that there kind of has always been, you know, some tension, even though, you know, I totally agree with you that, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, there was kind of a much more heterogeneous, you know, sexual gender kind of underground in most, you know, most major cities. In the film Screaming Queens, you know, we did make some choices about how to tell the story. You know, my filmmaking partner, Victor Silverman, and I, you know, initially thought we were going to make this film that was going to be, you know, like a much bigger, broader, you know, history of trans people in San Francisco. But then, you know, we kind of got realistic about the fact that, you know, we only had so many minutes of story time to be on the screen, and that this riot at Compton's Cafeteria, which, you know, we were thinking of as like the centerpiece of the film, the moment when things change, was actually just telling that story was going to be about as much time as we had. And so as we were thinking about what are the causes of that riot, it really was the police harassment and intimidation and violence that trans women were experiencing. It's like, right, they were the ones who are on the streets, they were the ones who were doing sex work, they were the ones who were being targeted. And so just like trying to really unpack the dynamics of the riot, it was a trans women, you know, assigned male at birth, you know, trans feminine story, which doesn't mean that, you know, there isn't a history of trans masculine people and, you know, assigned female at birth people that's not equally worthy of telling. It just wasn't the story of the riot. What I do know, though, then the third question is like, where does the trans masculine assigned female at birth story sit in? You know, it's like, that's a complicated question, because actually before the kind of the spectacular celebrity of Christine Jorgensen back in the 1950s, who was the first really sort of like globally famous trans person, it was sort of more common to think of trans issues in relationship to people who'd been assigned female at birth. It's like that's kind of what got the most attention. And then the Jorgensen story kind of shifted the paradigm, you know, and it was that way really until the 1990s. But, you know, so it's like in the 80s and 90s, you start to see trans masculine and assigned female at birth people starting to have a, you know, a much more legible history. I mean, they'd always been there. There was actually a really important trans man, this guy Reed Erickson, who was this sort of fabulously wealthy philanthropist who actually bankrolled a lot of the trans medical and social service stuff going on in the 1960s. You know, he was really instrumental in kind of helping established the possibility for trans people to access medical transition services. You know, really, really important guy. But the history, sort of like the social histories of trans masculine and trans feminine people, really, you know, are kind of out of sync with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there wasn't like the trans community. back in, you know, with like this whole like spectrum of people back in the 60s and 70s. Trans men start kind of organizing among themselves in the 80s, and then by the time the 90s come along and the kind of the queer moment at the height of AIDS activism, that's when you start to see, you know, when the word transgender kind of becomes this new way of thinking about, you know, gender variant people. It's like it's in the early 90s where you really see transmasculine and transfeminine, AFAB and AMAB people kind of coming together into a broader community. We're about like, you know, 20, 25, 26, 27 years into that process.
Mm-hmm. So to throw kind of a left curve, we had this conversation before the show, whether we were going to ask this or not. And I think we do want to ask this question. Do you still hold that there is a distinction between transgender and transsexual?
You know, that's an interesting question, because there, you know, there isn't just one transgender. It's like, you know, that cliche about, you know, the blind men and the elephant, you know, like, which part are you feeling? You know, it's like, oh, it's like a snake, it's like a tree trunk, you know. And so transgender is many things to many people. The way that I use it, I mean, just, and this is, you know, in some ways a generational perspective, is that transgender is kind of like the blanket term, or just trans is the blanket term that includes, you know, many different kinds of gender crossing and gender resisting behaviors. And I think of transsexual, which, you know, to me means like somebody who chooses or needs, you know, a kind of a medically assisted transition, and, you know, engages with, you know, hormones and surgery, and, you know, uses that to change state issued IDs and all of that. Like, I see transsexual as a subset of transgender, and I'm not one of these people who thinks of transsexual as a, you know, as a dirty word, you know, like, oh, like that's bad consciousness or something. It's like, you know, it's like it names a certain kind of relationship to medically assisted transition, and, you know, it's like, I'm personally fine with it. And I do see transsexual as a subset of this broader sense of trans or transgender. And, you know, but I also know that, you know, there's been, you know, a huge amount of controversy about that, you know, that way back in the day, like in the 70s and 80s, that sort of transgender meant people who change social gender without medicalizing that transition, and that they thought of themselves as not transsexual. And a lot of people who did think of themselves as transsexual thought transgender, you know, was kind of an invalidation of their own identity, and they really resented it when it kind of became the buzzword in the early 90s. And then since then, you know, what I've noticed, because like I said, I've been, you know, looking at this stuff for a long time, and, you know, have a lot of personal experience and, you know, experience with how things have changed over time, is that I've seen the word transgender now, like, come to mean almost what transsexual used to mean. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's like a transgender person is somebody who, like, crosses the binary and says, well, you know, I was assigned male, but now I'm a woman, or vice versa. And that it's, you know, gender nonconforming or non-binary or gender queer. That means what, in the early 90s, transgender meant. So, you know, it's just, there's just so much change. There's so much change about what words mean and how they're used and who uses them to mean what and which context. And, you know, it can be hard, I know, if somebody who's not you labels you as something that you don't think that you are. But what I hope we can have as a community is this sort of greater sense of like cutting people a little slack about how they name things, you know, I like, feel like you can hold, you know, you can hold your own, you know, you are who you are, you know, it's like you can have a polite conversation where you can like adjust, you know, people's, you know, perhaps mislabeling of you. But that, you know, it's just so easy in this really, you know, fragmented society that we live in to, like, really get up in arms about, you know, somebody calling you something that you don't identify as. And, you know, I guess this is like the part that I hope is like the older and wiser part, you know, for me. It's kind of like, you know, just like chill out a little bit, you know. It's like, let's not have unproductive fights, and remember who's ultimately on your side and who's like really like doesn't have your best interest at heart.
That is that. This is Aiden again. That is a very, very important thing to talk about, because I had a mother actually, and the last month, multiple times this has happened. A mom calls me and she tells me, crying, that her daughter is not talking to her because sometimes she misgenders her. And you know, it's important for all those young folks out there that are listening to remember that your parent addressed you for years and saw you for years as the gender that you were assigned to. So they're gonna think, they're gonna need time to adjust, time to get used to seeing you the way you want to be seen. And it is so important. I'm so glad that you talked about this.
I do think it's important, but I also think it's important that trans people not excuse indefinitely people who don't pay attention to the importance of naming and pronouns and identity labels. It's like, that is super important, but you know, I feel like, you know, we can do better if we grant people a little bit of slack while they're getting up to speed, if they're trying.
Exactly. You know,
if they're trying, right.
Well, Susan, we're going to take a really quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about some local stuff going on. So if you want to stay on with us through the end of the show, you're welcome to. If you want to leave like before the end of the show, you're also welcome to do that. If you do choose to go before the end of the show, can you just tell us again where people can find your book, what the name of your book is? Yeah.
Okay. I think I will take off, but have a great pride in Portland. My book, Transgender History, The Roots of Today's Revolution, available at booksellers everywhere, or if you must, through Amazon. You can also watch my film, Screaming Queens, The Riot at Compton's Cafeteria, which is available free of charge on Canopy, which is like an educational distribution platform that you can get through your library, or on Amazon Prime. It's available for streaming there. Anyway, it's been really great talking with you all. Happy Pride, and thanks for having me on.
It was an honor
to
have you on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you. And we'll be right back.
Then I'm up in Chi-Town, or Miami shutting down. It's that New Orleans, it's LA or the Bay, it's New York, Philly, and the whole DMV. I'm a Detroit player, man, it's North South Cat, Ohio, Pittsburgh, got St. Louis on deck. It's Delaware, Connecticut, it's New Jersey, got hella it's Queens, Brooklyn, and yeah, they rallying, Bronx, Harlem, and Staten.
All right, and we are back. So we just want to share in the last few minutes some of our stories about why we have pride.
All right. This is Nicolette. I guess I'll start. So I guess what my pride means to me is, you know, I think for as long as I can remember, I've always had it beaten into my head that I'm supposed to be female because that's what I was assigned at birth. And because of that, I'm supposed to conform to female gender norms, and I'm only supposed to be attracted to men. And I knew from a very young age, like even as a little kid, that that's just not who I am. And so I, you know, I think what I take pride in is knowing that I break the frame. I break the rules that society tries to enforce on me. I don't have to identify with my assigned sex. I don't have to fit into the gender binary. And in fact, my very existence defies the gender binary. I can be attracted to all genders. And you know what? Being pansexual means I have a lot more options. So I think that's what pride means to me. It's about the fact that I am free to be who I am. I can be proud of being who I am, even if that's different from what society expects me to be. And no matter how much they try to shame me, they can't change me. And believe me, they sure try to, because people will try and tell me that my identity doesn't even exist and that I'm just confused or trying to be special, but I'm just being who I am, and I'm proud to be free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Thank you. That's so great. Thanks for sharing that. Does anybody else want to share a story?
Sure. For me, it's, you know, Pride started when I first came out. I was 15 and a half. And you know how they used to say that if you put an earring on the right side, that meant you were gay,
yes,
that straight guys had to have it on the left. So when I came out, I took off my left earring and I opened 7 holes on my right ear. And, you know, of course, I paid the price for it back in the day. I had a very rebellious nature. But to me, it's like nobody could tell me how to dress, what to do, which is why I ended up on the streets. But for me, that moment when you say, no, you are not going to tell me who I am. I am going to discover who I am. For me, you know, I was 15 and a half, 16 years old. And it was a journey of this discovery that took me to a talk show, and this is the reason why I'm here. So for me, Pride represents endurance and fighting so that nobody can tell you who you are. Only you will discover that.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you know, there's the Pride event or events that, you know, was kind of the theme for our show this evening. And then there's living every day. And, you know, I hope that, you know, all of us out there can live every day with pride. But what these events coming up next week mean to me is this is a sociopolitical statement. It is us coming together, not just in community between ourselves to celebrate, but it is a show of numbers. It is a showing of political and social and cultural force that does not go unnoticed. And, you know, that's why I consider it so important to show up. It's an important statement out to the rest of the world. And so absolutely, that's what it means to me.
Well, I'm finding out today that I'm kind of tired of the fight. You know, it's like a lot of us have fought for a long time just to survive as ourselves. And it seems like every day these days we get just hammered with some kind of opposition or some kind of control or other thought. So personally, I'm really happy that there's a lot of us out there, because some of us can fall back and be a little tired and somebody else will stand up and and continue marching. So
yes,
I want to say thank you in advance to everybody who's marching and standing up and is feeling strong.
Yeah. So it's almost the end of the show, but before we close the show tonight, we wanted to remember someone in our trans and gender, non-binary, genderqueer, gender fluid community who was murdered this past month here in Portland. It was a gender fluid person named Gigi who has received different kinds of identities in the press. Gigi has been identified as transgender. But in speaking to people who were in communication with Gigi's family, as well as at Gigi's memorial, the consensus that I heard from most people was that Gigi was gender fluid. And Gigi was a 28-year-old gender fluid, gender non-binary, you know, spectrum identifying person who was staying at the women's homeless shelter. And we also understand that Gigi was not murdered because of their gender identity. It was an unfortunate accident. There was probably something that had to do with mental illness involved in the person that killed Gigi, but it wasn't specifically because of Gigi's gender identity. But we wanted to acknowledge Gigi because Gigi was a part of our community. And there was a really beautiful service at the Q Center last Friday that was organized with the help of Raina and Ethan and a couple of other people. But we came up with this statement just from talking to different people in the community. that reads as this. Gigi was genderqueer or gender fluid, and it sounds like they didn't die specifically because of their gender expression. People said that Gigi was a very generous person who tried to help other people and who had finally was beginning to kind of find their way in life as a gender fluid, gender non-binary person when they unfortunately died. And so we just want to remember that part of the reason that we gather in community is because we want to remember the people who have come before us, even the ones who just came before us last week. We want to hold their memory sacred. And, you know, we want Gigi, wherever you are, to know that your life matters and that the presence that you gifted us with here in Portland matters and that we all honor and cherish your memory. So we just wanted to say that at the end of our show. And we'll be back next month for our next show of Transpositive. And in the meantime, I just want to remind you there is a whole bunch of stuff going on. The Radical Pride March is happening the weekend of Pride, the Dyke March, the Trans March, and then on Sunday the 17th is the big Pride March. So I hope to see you out on the streets.
Good evening. The time is 7 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and up next is Calculated Conversations.
Join KBOO and Kofallen Cultural Center on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for an evening of storytelling, live music, and film. Malian artist, author, and storyteller Baba Wage Jakite starts with a talk on the background of the Empire of Mali and the role of West Africa's oral historians before the screening of Keita, Heritage of the Griots, a film which blends modern events with magical realism, mythology, and history. Again, that's an evening of the culture of Mali, including the screening of the film Keita, Heritage of the Griots, on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522.